Welcome back, Bucks Talk podcast listeners. After an extended absence from putting out podcasts for you guys, we are back to sum up the end of the season, talk about the offseason, and some projections for 2019. We apologize for taking such a long absence off. We had some issues with our website, and of course, the Pirates weren't that fun to cover. But today we will be talking about the finish to the season. The Pirates ended up pretty hot. They went 16-8 in their last 24 games. We will talk about infield, some of the outfield, and the bullpen. And then we will give our 2019 realistic signings. And when I say realistic, I would like to attach the phrase financial flexibility to it and would like to just have you guys be reserved when listening to it, because obviously this team's not going to go out and get a Craig Kimbrell. With that being said, I will let Kevin start it off and talk about the finish to the season.
Yeah, so the last time we talked, it was right after that San Francisco series. Clay Holmes had got the start that game, and we all know how that went. I'm sure a lot of people stayed up to watch that. It was a Friday night, and the Pirates were hot at the time. And he got shelled, and the Pirates just did not play well that game. The management of that game was just absolutely horrid. But since then, we said they needed to win a bunch of games in August. They didn't. After our last podcast in August, I believe they went 5-11. September, they finished hot. They finished 16-10. So they finished with a record of 82-79. That last game with the Marlins got rained out and canceled when we got knocked out of the playoffs. So interesting note, for the second time in the last 3 years now, since the Pirates have not made the playoffs, they have not played a full 162-game slate. Hoping we can change that next year and be a little more relevant a little longer. But that being said, they also didn't officially mathematically get knocked out of the playoffs until about 10 games or so left in the season, which, I mean, I certainly wasn't expecting that kind of production. Obviously, my prediction was 73 wins, and they got 9 wins more. So I was pretty happy with how they finished. All the hype there after the trade deadline really dissipated quickly when they faded in August. But you can never, really be upset with a nice 16-10, 6-plus games over 500 month of September to close out the season. You get a little momentum to start the season, and really some major pluses for the Pirates when you kind of round out the whole season. You know, their starting pitching was really good once they kind of got it all figured out a little bit. In particular, they had two guys finish in the top 10 in the National League in ERA, and that was Trevor Williams. He was number 7. He had a 3.11 ERA, and Jameson Taillon had a 3.20 ERA, and that was good for number 9. Williams went 14-10, 31 starts. That's really nice to see. 170 innings, you want that to get bumped up a little bit. But in this day and age of bullpens, and with, the amount, the good bullpen the Pirates have, you don't necessarily need that to really be more than that. A whip of 1.18, that's really nice to see. He had a great, he doesn't have the best stuff. Everyone knows it. And he got shelled there in May and June, I believe. But then after that, he was just a force. In his last 15 starts, he had a 2.15 ERA. His last 7 starts, he had a 1.77 ERA. That was really nice to see. And like we said it numerous times, they don't really have a number one definitive guy, but they got a lot of good twos and threes. And that being said, Jameson Taillon might finally be that number one guy that we've been wanting. I mean, he's got the mentality for it. And we noted when he was getting knocked around there at the start of the season there, at least I know I did, was, you hope that testicular cancer he had last year, because, didn't permanently mess him up, because, he had done so well his rookie year. He had a good start to 2017, and then, the cancer and all that, and everyone knows the story, and he hadn't started this year off that great. But, he really finished strong. He finished with a 3.20 ERA. He started all 32 games, even the second-to-last game of the season. He didn't need to finish that. He didn't need to start that game, and he wound up getting the loss. But he still went 6 innings. He only gave up 3 runs, so it's a quality start. No walks and 7 strikeouts against Cincinnati. So you like to see that. You got a horse, a guy with that starter ace mentality when, you're out of the playoffs. You don't need to start the last game. so far as I know, he didn't have any financial benefits to gain from that last game in terms of, you know, incentives. But, you know, he still went out and pitched, finished with a 14-10 record, 191 innings, 179 strikeouts, and just like Trevor Williams, a 1.18 whip. You cannot be, you know, you cannot understate or overstate how important and well those guys pitched toward the end of the season. And they're going to be, we're going to need them to be just as good next year if the Pirates want to compete. And then one guy on in the field I want to talk about is Pablo Reyes, the 5'8", 170 pounds of utility guy we got. And I actually think he played mostly outfield. And age 25, he only had 58 at-bats, not that big a sample size. But it's hard not to get excited about it. In those 58 at-bats, he had 17 hits. That's good for a .293 average. His on-base percentage was .349. That's pretty good. And on-base plus slugging of .832 with three homers and seven RBIs. I mean, I don't know what the Josh Harrison situation will be. I don't see him coming back. I don't see the Pirates bringing him back. I imagine they're going to decline his option. It's obviously a much cheaper way to go than his – I believe his option is around $10.5 million. And if he can play all over the field, they're certainly going to need a guy like that. Shoot, I think I'm a half an inch or so taller than him. And, you know, he's just all over the field. He's laying out for balls. He's, you know, ball jumps off his bat, it looked like, pretty good. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him come spring training time. But I'd imagine if he has a decent spring, he'll crack the lineup come opening day. So that's kind of what I got for the end of the season. It was just disappointing August, like I said, with all the moves they made, the hype that surrounded the team, but good finish to the end of the season. They managed to get over 500 for just the seventh time since the last time they won the World Series in 1979. So that's a big plus. Could be a major stepping stone here for things to come.
I agree with all of that. And I think I've said on a previous podcast that Pirates fans aren't necessarily spoiled, but we are used to what have you done for me lately. With the success we had from 2012 to 2015, fans have forgotten about that 20-some year losing streak and really have expected greatness from these teams. And really, the Pirates being the stepchild of the three major sports teams in Pittsburgh, they really were at the top there those 3 years. And being in the division they are in the NL Central, it's tough to expect playoff berths, and it's even harder to expect a team that doesn't go out and just add to the bottom line to make the playoffs every year, including the wild card game. So I think I know they outshined my prediction by about six games, and pretty much everybody's expectations this year were superseded by how they did. And they were a fun team to watch. They were very, very streaky, which is extremely fun on the highs, but extremely frustrating and depressing on the lows. And you wanted to see them become a little more consistent. They had some injuries that derailed that. They shook up the roster a couple times with some additions here, subtractions there. But ultimately, it was a fun team to watch. It was a better season, as you had described, than what we were used to in a long time. So I think we should be excited again, and I think we should reserve our expectations a little bit going into next year and just enjoy the team that they get that puts out, because I know I mentioned this before, is the players they currently have, and I don't think it'll change very much through free agency. They'll keep the core, but this team fights. It's almost like they know that they're undervalued and expected to be a middle-of-the-road team, but they go out and act like they're the Yankees or the Astros and one of these teams that is perennially a powerhouse and deep playoff contender. With that being said, they ended 16-8 their last 24 games, and I focus on this span because Labor Day, they pretty much turned around to where they ended up at the end of the year. They had a five-game win streak on Labor Day and on, and then about a week and a half later, they had another five-game win streak. So it really boosted their win-loss record. It got them back to 500, and then they got over at 500 and never looked back. Two of the reasons, and I won't mention Trevor Williams because I feel like everybody knows how good Trevor Williams was this year. I expect him to finish top 10 in the Cy Young. As crazy as that sounds, I don't think it's crazy at all to see him 6th or 7th there. But I want to talk about Jameson Taillon and Chris Archer. Now, starting with Taillon, as you mentioned, I think they finally found their ace. And I say finally because we saw some of this before. This isn't new. He's had the stuff. He's had the poise to be that ace in this pitching staff. It's just it goes away so often, and we're so quick to doubt him. But he has pretty much turned it around every time that he has his lows and his bad streaks. From July 7th to the end of the season is the sample size that I'm going to look at. He had quality starts in 13 of those 15 games. He averaged almost a walk per outing, and it really was just dominant. Had a 2.40 ERA, as you described, and he just looked like the number one for this team. People are taking notice. I know a lot of national analysts have broken down Taillon and how different he looks than from last season and the beginning of this year. Taillon, if he can spread that out over a 162-game season, they went 11-4 in games that he started, those 15 games, and he got a decision of 9-4. It's just huge. Looking at 2019, he'll be the first building block when you think of the team's success, and mixed with Trevor Williams, they've got a good 1-2 punch. And to add to that 1-2 punch, I'll talk about Chris Archer. All of September is where I'll look. He looked to be their number two, and a solid number two, not just in Pirates terms. I know we say they've got threes throughout the roster, but his September sample size is a number two MLB pitcher. He had a 10.8 strikeout per nine and a 1.06 whip. And that whip, to me, is the biggest number because his first couple starts, five outings, I want to say, he walked and gave up hits like nobody's business. He was hit hard, and he struggled with command through most of his first couple outings. So he turned it around there, ended up going 3-2 in games that he started, and he got a decision of 2-1. He had a 2.70 ERA for the month of September. It's easy to still hate the trade, largely dependent on how Meadows plays in the majors. Glasnow looked really good for a little bit, but kind of regressed to the norm that we're used to. So if Glasnow stays at that projection, and Meadows hopefully isn't an all-star, because I'll be extremely depressed on that one. And then obviously the wild card would be how Shane Baz develops, which right now looks to be a lot worse than the first-round pick that we got for him. Where I wanted to talk about the end of the season and what kind of fueled them, the Pirates also averaged about 4.5 runs per game at the end of the year, so the offense showed up. But that's about all I got. Like I said, they looked good. Pablo Reyes is so fun, and I hope he finds a way to stay at the major league level. He's easy to root for. He makes some spectacular plays in the outfield, just a high-energy guy. And like you said, he's got bat speed. He's got good pop. So I think we'll see a lot of him in spring training. Ending the year on the major league level is always a good sign for the next upcoming season. So we'll see how that goes. Moving on, I want to talk about the infield and primarily what will it look like in 2019. The Pirates had a lot of kind of experimentation with the infield towards the end of the year, enough to where I really don't know if anybody knows what's going to happen. I think the only starting spot is Colin Moran at third, just because it justifies that trade that they made. I don't think they want to give up on him. I don't really want to give up on him that fast. But the fact of the matter is his bat was a lot worse than they anticipated, and he was pretty much below average at third base defensively. So I'm a little worried. He showed flashes. He was very good. He led all rookies for a while there with batting and kind of regressed toward the end of the season, much like Corey Dickerson. But what's your take on the infield? Do you have a take? And who would you like to see them trot out at third, second, and shortstop?
I know I said on a couple earlier pods, I was really into Colin Moran, and at the time he was, he was just steady as can be. But like you said, he did regress toward the middle, dog days, ends of the season. Although I did read that he made a Gregory Polanco style adjustment to where he moved back a little bit from the plate and, hit in the high 280s for around the last month of the season, something like that. But yeah, they cannot give up on him yet. He was a major piece of that Garrett Cole trade, who's just been dominant for the Astros, dominated in the postseason, So they can't give up on that return yet. They, Joe Musgrove is going to be, solid in the rotation for us again. But for that trade to really be considered a win, even if Michael Feliz doesn't pan out, which I'm not holding my breath, they need Colin Moran to hit around 20 to 25 homers at the absolute minimum. I mean, they don't need him to hit 35, 36 every single year. It's hard to do, and even with all the home runs, that's still kind of hard to do. But they need him to be in the 20s for homers, and they need Josh Bell to match on the opposite end of the diamond. They need him absolute minimum 20 home runs, and you got a really solid corner of the infield there if that happens. If they would like a cheap backup option on the third base side at the hot corner, I guess Josh Donaldson. I wouldn't want to see him here in Pittsburgh. He didn't do anything with the Indians when they picked him up. I think he had one hit in their three games against the Astros in the American League Division Series. But, just so many injuries. He had such a bad ending in Toronto. I wouldn't want to see him there, but that would be a reasonable get for the Pirates, I think. So many injuries. They could probably get him on the absolute cheap, be a reclamation project, obviously. But I say you got to trot out Colin Moran and be confident with it, because I'm still holding out hope that he can be good. I think he can be at the very least consistent, after this full season, because this was still just his first full season in the major leagues. So we'll see what he comes out with next year. But for the infield, Newman and Kramer, our Seinfeld duo, didn't really knock your socks off there in September, but they're rookies. That's not entirely to be unexpected. Kramer hit, I believe, 311 down in AAA. So he's obviously going to get a big time look here come spring training. And Josh Harrison, like I said, he probably won't be on the team anymore. He costs way too much for what you get for him. He's injured constantly. He cannot be on the squad next year. Jordy Mercer would not surprise me to bring back. I wouldn't be too excited about it. It is what it is. They're going to spend what they're going to spend, and Jordy Mercer, they can probably get a nice discount just because he's been here so long. As for infield free agents, it might be a little bit of a pipe dream, but as Drubal Cabrera, he'll be 33 come spring training next year. He batted 262, 316, 774 for his slash line between the Mets and the Phillies. He hit 23 homers, 75 RBIs, and he played 147 games. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing them pick up a guy like that. It doesn't have to be him. I think he'd be a good get if they can get him for the right price, but I don't think they will. His asking price is going to be too big. I believe he's a Scott Boras client. I don't know that for a fact, but it sounds right. At the very least, they got to be better in the field. That's all I'm really going to be able to say about it. Adam Frazier has to start at second. He proved he can do it. He proved he can play decent enough second. And so long as he's hitting, between 280 and 300, that's going to be a huge plus. Whatever he did down in AAA when he got sent down early in the season, it absolutely worked. He tore it up once he came back to the bigs. And he had some pop in his bat, too. That'd be big, too, if he could hit around 10, 12, maybe even 13 home runs for the Pirates next season. Just get better on the fielding side. That's all I'm going to say on that for now. What do you think about that?
Like you said, I'll start with the two Kevins that we can just add to this podcast. We can talk about four Kevins. So Kevin Kramer, I'll start with. I don't know if he'll ever hit major league arms, and at that point, I would already dismiss the idea of him being a major league prospect. But in all seriousness, he couldn't bat. He only had 5 hits and 37 at bats. He bat 100-something, I don't even think it's worth looking up, in the 21 games he appeared in. He did hit pretty well in AAA this year. He's been moved through the major or minor league system pretty quickly, so I don't want to dismiss him completely. He's a prospect that was pretty much, their season was lost, so they called him up, which I do like. I do like that they called up these young guys, because good teams do that with development that have nowhere to go. You got to see what they have in them. So I would expect that Kramer would start at AAA, unless he rips the cover off the ball in spring training, but he can't hit. And I'm not the expert on defensive stats. I should probably brush up on how to read them, but everything I looked into was negative. against the average major league level second base, third base. With Newman, marginally better bat, and by marginally, I mean Mendoza line marginally. So he's not much better hitting. He's been a little bit better fielder, but they're pretty much the same person. I will always tend to say that just because they both move through the system the same way. They're both named Kevin, and they kind of play overlapping positions, but I don't think either of them are short-term solutions. It's to be seen on long-term solutions. You never want to count somebody out on like 40 to 50 at-bats in their first season, but that's all I've got on them. Colin Moran, like you said, and I mentioned, he's got to start at third. I don't think he'll ever be a 25 home run guy, but like you said, he made adjustments to his swing. He is a rookie technically, but at this point, when you get to that age, it's pretty hard to become a Max Muncy or Luke Voit like the Yankees and Dodgers fell face first into, as my uncle liked to say. But at his age, I don't know if we're going to get more than what we see, but I'm hopeful there. Josh Harrison, you were right. He's got a 10.5 club option. There's no way they bring him back. And if they do, I expect them to drop the option and then re-sign him to a shorter deal with a lot less money. I really like Josh Harrison. I don't think that's ever been the problem with him. It's always been the number associated with Josh Harrison with that contract. He's a great locker room guy. He's part of the reason this team fights so hard and is fun to watch. So I will not like to see him go, but there's no way he plays for the Pirates at $10.5 million. Frazier, I would expect Frazier to start in the outfield, depending on what happens with Corey Dickerson. He'll obviously play at second, but I would expect outfield to be his main spot until Polanco gets back. And obviously this all hinges on free agency. We don't know where they're going to do. But as it stands with their prospects and who they have on the team, I would expect Frazier to be the third outfielder. And then Jung-Ho Gung, the last person I'll talk about, is obviously a wild card, has a club option, but it's super friendly. I think it's like $5.5 million. Which is dirt cheap for somebody with his talent. Whether or not he can unlock that and get back to where he was before he got hurt by Chris Coughlin, that would be a nice addition, to be completely honest. The only thing is, Neil Huntington stated that there's no chance that Gung plays at shortstop. He'll be just third base exclusively. So that, what we just touched on, creates a problem. Moran expected to be the starter full-time there, so basically means Gung is the first bat off the bench and just your Sunday starter. So we'll see what happens there. That's all I've got for the infield. It's pretty bleak, to be completely honest. I don't think Hechavarria is even under contract. I think he's a free agent. I don't think there's any reason to bring him back.
We don't even have him anymore. We unloaded him.
To the Yankees, right?
I think he got
traded to the Yankees. So you're right. Yeah. So he's not.
It was the same couple of days as when they got unloaded Freeze.
Okay.
I forget to who. Might have been the Yankees. Sounds right.
Yeah. Freeze went to the Dodgers. I think Hechavarria went to the Yankees, if I remember right. But so yeah, I apologize for bringing him up. So he's gone. So obviously they've got no in-house answers on a major league level. So there's going to be some spots open. We'll see if they go sign somebody. They usually do. But it's usually nobody that should be starting to begin with. But from there, I'd like to move to the bullpen. I've got a couple quick points I'll touch on, and then I'll pass it over to you. And I'll start with the negative and then work back to the positives. The biggest negative is the major blow with Edgar Santana, obviously having Tommy Johns. That will sideline him for all of 2019 and hopefully have him back for 2020 spring training. And the other negative, which is yet to be seen if it's a negative, but Rich Rod is a free agent, so they'll have to re-sign him. And I believe he's an unrestricted free agent, which makes things difficult. That means every team in the majors is going to have a stab at him to negotiate. So I would love to see them re-sign him, but I don't know what his market value is. Obviously one of the best bullpen arms that the Pirates have, and one of the most consistent. on the positive side, you've got one of the best 1-2 punches in the NL in Felipe Vasquez and Keona Kella. So those both will be back. Kella is still pre-arbitration, or either arbitration his first year, but he'll definitely be back. And then you've got Crick, Feliz, and Kingham all pre-arbitration. And I know you love when I bring up Feliz, but you never know what'll happen there. He was injured a lot this year. He showed flashes. He looked like he was terrible all at the same time. So big wild card there, but Kyle Crick, my boy, our fan favorite here on the pod, he'll be back. With that, I'll let you take a stab at the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I actually did not realize that Richard Rodriguez was going to be a free agent. I did not know that.
Yeah, big, big blow.
That really complicates things now. They've got to re-sign him. Do what it takes, honestly. This will be marginally unhinged, but if this team wants to have any remote amount of credibility for the fans of Pittsburgh sports, they re-sign Richard Rodriguez, give him whatever the hell he wants. They fixed him from the garbage mess that is the Baltimore Orioles, and he delivered. He was consistent all year. You have got to re-sign him, especially because you're now going to miss Edgar Santana for minimum one full season. I mean, that I did not know that. That kind of pisses me off, actually. Did not know that. But let's assume they re-sign him. They get him a nice deal, you know, nice financial flexible deal. That'll be awesome. Anyways, there's a couple guys I'd like to see him re-sign. They need to or to sign maybe in free agency. Of course they won't, but I mean it's fun to dream. It's a podcast. They need to fix their long relief for the days where the pitcher, the starter, just doesn't have it, and he only gives you 3 or 4 innings, and you got to bridge that 5th, 6th, and maybe even 7th inning, depending on how the season's playing out, how that week's playing out. Did you have to, you know, go to the bullpen more than you wanted to? They have got to fix that. Because Trevor Brault, I like him. His tattoos are fun. He's a fun guy. He's a nice guy. I love his podcast there with Trevor Williams. But he ain't it. He did not pitch well this year at all. That being said, they could pick up a guy like Joe Kelly. He's going to be 30 next year. He is 30. In Boston, I believe he's still in Boston. He had a 4.39 ERA this year with a 1.36 WHIP, and 65 2/3 innings pitched. He's a former starter. You know, used to start for the Cardinals. That's a guy I could see them taking a chance on because, you know, he's now in his 30s, getting a little older, little bit of reclamation project because of the ERA. And they could convert him back into a more long-inning relief man if he'd be open to that sort of role. Because that's a major, major hole for this team, honestly. Because, when you know, if there's a game and whoever it is starting, I don't know, and they give up 5 runs in the first 3 innings, but your offense scores you 6. Now we take out our starter in the 4th inning. We're up 6-5. We have to find a way to bridge that 2-3 inning gap to get it to our dominant back end of the bullpen without, you know, giving up 5, 6, 7 runs in the middle relief. That's a major problem, and it was all year. That's something that absolutely needs fixed. A guy I could see them maybe taking a chance on for the back end of the bullpen is Cody Allen, the Indians pitcher. He'll be a free agent. He'll be 31. He had an absolutely god-awful year. Somehow, he still managed 27 saves and a 4.70 ERA with a 1.36 WHIP. The reason why he probably got 27 saves was because he struck out 80 in 67 innings. That's really good. But you know, like you said before we started, he'll probably want closer money. But he could, you know, that's definition reclamation project for Ray Searidge with that astronomical ERA. And I know it's a little different with relievers, but you know, I live in Northeast Ohio, you know, I saw how many times he just imploded, and it was quite frequently. And then Justin Wilson, the former Pirate, he had a really good year, like he just kind of always does. 3.46 ERA, 1.43 WHIP, that's a little high. 54 and two-thirds innings and 69 strikeouts. They need another back-end guy now with Edgar Santana being gone, and we don't know what will happen with Rich Rod. But, you know, he was drafted by the Pirates. We brought him up. We had to give him up, unfortunately, for to get Francisco Cervelli, who put together a nice season, by the way. Shout out to him, even with all the injuries. Still a very nice season for him. I don't know if they'll get any of these guys. I kind of doubt they will. But these are all honestly, I think these are realistic guys for the Pirates to get. You take a look at the past history or last season's stats, the age of them all is ripe for the Pirates, especially in terms of bullpen arms. They need the bullpen to just be, especially the back end, to be just as dominant as it was this year if they want to have any hope of contending. And I really did mean they have got to re-sign Rodriguez if they want to have a shred of credibility with the fans, honestly.
I completely agree. And the Rich Rod, I faintly remember noticing that he was a free agent on a one-year deal this year with the Pirates earlier in the season. And I obviously you didn't think very much of it because he wasn't a very big part at the time. I think I remembered it. But now, obviously, a huge piece to that bullpen that they might not even have next year. And being an unrestricted free agent, it just opens a load of trouble for the Pirates. And it's just not how they do things. So that is definitely one of my first priorities with free agency. Some other realistic signings. In the first, I'll get Pirates fans excited. Andrew McCutchen makes a lot of sense. And not just for the sentimental and Pirates way. It makes sense on the field. Obviously, with Polanco injuring his left knee and left shoulder, he's not going to throw or touch a baseball bat for at least 5 months. You don't know what his swing will be like. And torn labrums change how people swing. They change how people throw. And Polanco, the only reason he's relevant in the outfield defensively is because of the cannon that he has on his arm. And because he tore his left shoulder, it's obviously going to affect how he throws. Hopefully he makes a perfect comeback and is the player that we saw the good of this year. He was marginally better than people think. Just very, very, very streaky, like the whole Pirates team. And I think that had a lot to do with why they were very streaky this year as a whole. But Andrew McCutchen makes sense as your third outfielder and bridge player once Polanco comes back. Mix them both in. I think that what we saw out of McCutchen after he left and had a full season away from the Pirates, I think that brings his value back down to where the Pirates could re-sign him if he chose to do that. And I think he's a Boris agent as well, which doesn't bode well for the Pirates. But you never know. The next one, I think, is a perfect outfielder for the Pirates. And would be nice to see him in black and gold instead of murdering the black and gold is John Jay. He's a very good speed option. He hits for average. He's got a very good glove and an average arm. So I think he would be a perfect right fielder for the time being. Some pitchers, two starters I have down. This guy was linked to the Pirates back when he pitched for the Yankees at the trade deadline, I think 2 years ago, and this is Nathan Eovaldi. He's getting up there in age, but he's got a very good fastball still. That's always been his number one pitch, and he's got the veteran presence I think would be a good number five plus in that rotation, and he would definitely be cheap enough for the Pirates to make an offer. I have two pipe dream free agents on here, if you don't count Andrew McCutchen. The one being Jeremy Hellickson. This dude has not lived up to the hype of being the number one overall prospect as a starting pitcher with the Rays. But since leaving the Rays, he has been pretty great for the Phillies. And wherever he's at now, I think he got traded again. But he's been very good. He'll probably be too expensive. I think he's sitting at $13 million right now. And I expect him to get paid probably more than that on the open market. But I think that would be a great addition to this rotation. I've got the bullpen arm I'd like to see the Pirates go after is Tyler Clippard. another one of those highly touted prospects when he was with the Nationals. Just never panned out to be worth the hype. But Tyler Clippard has put together some good seasons, especially with the Mets. He was pretty good. So he's got good stuff. I think they could use him, but to be seen. And then two infield guys. The first being a reasonable Alcides Escobar. Great glove, hits for average. Not going to give you much more than those two things, though. I just think he would be a great addition at shortstop. He would shore up that spot. And you could pretty much play him all over the infield. But I think he would be a good addition, just getting up there in age. The other pipe dream would be DJ LeMahieu. Basically, a worth the $10.5 million that we pay Josh Harrison is a more consistent DJ LeMahieu. Hits for average, median home runs. I think he had 15 this year. But very good player. He draws a lot of walks. He's got good plate vision and strikes out about as much as J.A. So I don't think they'll have enough offer to go get DJ LeMahieu. I think one of the contending teams will add him as a utility infielder, just as a luxury, but I think that would be a nice addition to this Pirates team. That's all I've got. I'll let you say your closing thoughts, and then I'll add to that, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'd love to see Kutch back. I don't know if he'd really be willing to come back after all that happened, you know, dangled him by a thread on the waiver, on the trade block for a couple of years, and then finally let him go for a relief pitcher, even though that relief pitcher's turned out to be fantastic. But, you know, in the outfield, they that needs to be a priority, because Jordan Luplo ain't going to be it. And, you know, even though we both love Frazier, that still kind of remains to be seen how well he can manage the outfield for an extended period of time. Two guys, A.J. Pollock, Michael Brantley, both be 31, both coming off of the last couple of years having, you know, pretty significant injuries. Michael Brantley, before the 2014 season started, he signed a four-year, only $25 million contract with the Indians, super team-friendly. Then he was an all-star, I believe, in both 14 and 15. And then between 2016 and 17, he only played 101 games total. But then this year, he came back with a force. He was a major, major cog for the Indians. Batted 309. He had 17 homers and 76 RBIs with, you know, a dozen steals. That's a really good season. It won't surprise me if he stays with the Indians, honestly. You know, they stuck with him. And the Indians now just getting swept out of the division series, they might need to prove a little statement to their fans that they still mean business and they still want to contend in the AL. So they might dish out the dollars for Michael Brantley. He's a fan favorite there in Cleveland, I know. But, you know, he's a good outfielder, you know, really good, you know, out in the field, and he can hit for average, and he's got some pop. I wouldn't be surprised if the Pirates maybe went after him. I'd certainly love to see that. And then A.J. Pollock, he's a really good outfielder. I know he's a former Gold Glover. Hit 21 homers this year. That's a career high. But him too, you know, in 2016, he only played 12 games. He was injured the whole season. Last 2017, he only played 112. And this year, he played 113. So he's coming off injuries, and I think he might be a little more realistic than Michael Brantley, especially because the Diamondbacks might be looking to rebuild a little bit and shed a little bit of salary. They might not try to re-sign him. But he'll give you a little pop, and he plays really good out in the outfield. But that needs to be – that and third base. For priorities this offseason, I'd say definitely outfield needs to be one, just because Polanco will be out till minimum June, and probably they are not going to rush him back, maybe even until the All-Star break, honestly. That's all speculation, but just knowing how the Pirates do things, they're not going to, you know, be trotting him out there with half a shoulder, you know. It ain't happening. So they need someone to fill in for the outfield that will provide offense consistently. And Adam Frazier could be it. I don't know. I'd like to see him more in the infield. I think that better suits him personally. So I'd rank outfield number one. Long relief has got to be number two because they need that. Long relief and bullpen, just shoring up, make sure we're not going to have major drop-off because we have really good bullpen pieces, and that is a major strength now, and it needs to continue to be next year if the Pirates want to, you know, pretend like they're contending. And then third base, just see what happens. Colin Moran is going to be the starter. They're not going to really do anything, but make sure he is more consistent. So those are my top three priorities there for the offseason, you know. And they're going to have an uphill battle again next year. I mean, the Cubs are still going to be good, even though they couldn't score runs for the better half of the last 2 months of the season. The Brewers are going to be tough, but they played the Brewers really good this year. So, you know, I mean, maybe we're trying to reverse fortunes a little bit against Milwaukee. And the Cardinals are the Cardinals. They always win somehow with some no-names from their double-A squad coming up here and hitting 300. I don't know how they do it. But the NL Central is the deepest division in baseball, and the National League is much more competitive than the American League. So if you want to pretend to you're contending, maybe even get a second wildcard spot, you're going to need more than 85 wins at a minimum next year. And they got some holes they need to fill. They had a good end of the season. Overall, they had a good season, 82-79. I'm not going to completely complain about it given the expectations. But they got some answers they need to fill. And again, like I said, they won back, I think, some fans with the Archer and Kella trades. Maybe not the best time trade for the Archer trade, but we've been over that. Go listen to that podcast. Now they need to do it again. They finished horrendous in attendance. And understandable, horrible weather and obviously fan anger. But make a decent move here and there. Nothing major, but fill it, plug a hole. And they could have a really good team next year. I really think that. My way too early prediction, I'll say 86 wins next year. And that's because the pitching, the starting pitching, should be better for the whole season, I think.
That's a good point to put it at. I think 86 is a good number. I will go 87 just because they spited me this year and went above and beyond. I think I said 83 wins, so I'll go 87. I think you're right. Their rotation as it sits right now is set, obviously, with Tyon Archer, Trevor Williams, Ivan Nova, and Joe Musgrove. But things change fast in the major leagues. Injuries happen often. So we'll see what happens there. I will leave you with the Pirates' top guys in salary based on spot track. So Francisco Cervelli leads the team with a base salary of $10.5 million. And then you go Josh Harrison, Ivan Nova, Starling Marte, Jordy Mercer, Jung Ho Gung, after Corey Dickerson. So potentially 1, 2, 3, 4 of those players may not even be with the team next year, which leaves you to think, I have no idea what this team is going to do. And realistically, Josh Harrison, Jordy Mercer, there's no way we'll be back. And Jung Ho Gung are very realistic to not come back this year. So you've got a 33-year-old catcher that's going to be making the most on the team, and it's just the most Pirates thing you've ever heard of. So I really doubt this is the year they go spend and get people. There's really not anything out there to go get that I think they can outbid players on, even if they were to go spend money. But who knows? Maybe Nutting cares. That's to be seen. But we'll see if we can get you a couple podcasts through this off season on some prospect news, some free agents, and maybe after the winter meetings. That's usually a pretty good hype time for the major leagues. So we appreciate you guys if you're still left listening. We're excited to get back to doing this, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Left field, here comes Marte. Did he hold on? He did it again. This guy just saved the game. He himself raises the Jolly Roger. It's a Marte.